start with an introduction.
My name is Victoria Nyeno from Etataveta. I live in Qatar. For you to come to Qatar, you are coming for a job. So your employer sponsors you. And depending on your job category, you can sponsor your family. So that is the process, simple and clear. Your employer sponsors you, you come here. So for us who emigrate to the Gulf, we know it's either you look for another immigration process. So people come here and then they move on to, let's say, Canada and Australia and US and Europe. Or you plan at some point you have to go back to your home country. I came to Doha in 2009. 2008, I did a lot of traveling across Europe. And I think that was the first time that I met systems that worked. And I liked the order of things. And that was at the height of the 2008 economic crisis. So there were so many Kenyans in Qatar, but we didn't know because people don't have this interest. Or they hear things about the Middle East and they decide it's a difficult place to hide. It was after the 2008 clash, the stolen election, and I did not know how to explain. I did not know how to theorize about it, but I was like, this is not how human beings should live. Now, moving countries is not easy. It's a shift in culture. It's a shift in the way things are, in the order. It's a total shift. And when I got here, culturally, they are a little bit reserved. So it is actually very conservative compared to Kenya. The Middle East, the Gulf, especially Qatar, UAE, is not like the Western world, like the Australians and the Canadas, where you can go, I don't know, it's a green card, or you can go try to naturalize yourself.
What are some of those transferable skills that if I'm in Kenya, I can carry off?
Your qualifications must be converted. So they have these systems where they will have to look at your certificates and you don't provide them. You provide them with a link to, let's say, Kenya Nursing Association that gives nurses diplomas. They will forward your transcripts and your diploma copies of those certified copies to these organizations that will evaluate your qualifications. And then they say, okay, these are good. And then you follow some other procedures to work as a medical worker here in Qatar. Now, I think some of the medical workers from the Arab region, so Egypt, Jordan, because of the advantage of the Arabic language, much easier. But they also go through hoops to convert their certificates. So from Kenya, your education, very important. One of the very good transferable skill is your English language skills. English is the medium that allows us to communicate. It is a very multicultural society here. We have a lot of your Indians, you have a lot of Arab-speaking people. You have your Africans from different African countries. English is your expats from the Western world. So English is a medium that needs one that allows us to work together. It's not always Arabs that are running shops or taxis or what have you. It's people from different countries. And so English is a medium that is very, very useful here in Qatar, at least like that. It's a very close society. The Qataris themselves are very few compared to the immigrants. So you have these social interactions out there, not inside their space. Immigration is also about learning about the other culture. Also, the culture, it is very mixed. There is a lot of Indian subcontinent influence and larger Arabic influence, larger Middle Eastern, like let's say food. I would go out with the grilled meats, the Turkish style, Lebanese style restaurants. The food has a lot of influences from all these other places. That's what I would say. So it's very interesting. So you do have your black Qataris that are here. So in terms of the racial composition, I see it's very interesting. I'd say countryism. Passports are very interesting and powerful here. So I'll give you an example. Me and my black American colleague, we might get into a shop and people just go, the blacks. And then my black American colleagues open their mouth and the black American accent, she becomes somebody else. This is a tax-free country, but still you have to pay your taxes. Okay? So the differentiation is in where do you come from to some extent. So I don't know. I think a passport claims my identity. So you have people who actually come here, they work very hard, they find another place, they move to like Canada. Yeah, it's interesting. But so then again, I think for me, I've put myself in a very safe cocoon, because although we are multicultural, we also like to keep ourselves so that the Kenyans are their own Kenyans, or the Africans are their own Africans, and then you have your Arabs, and then you have... So sometimes we don't. But I have noticed since the blockade, which has now been lifted, a lot of African students were recruited into the universities. And so a lot of those Black students, their experience is different because of the way they interact. I came here, my because I'm not in school, I'm living outside, my network is full of Kenyans. My students, however, their interaction is different. They interact with the Arabic students, they interact. These other ones, when you ask them, they say, oh, it's hip-hop, we love hip-hop. So we are using the words in hip-hop, blah, blah, blah. So their reality is slightly different from me. And this is also something that I wanted to clarify. Here, there's also very strict social stratification. So you work this way, you live in these areas. And by the way, it's not like areas like Kitusuru, Runda, and Kibera, no. But your life accords you a certain shield compared to the ones who are working below you. So like, I am very sure if you asked the cleaners, the security guards who are from Kenya, their experience is different from mine, how they are treated, because it depends with the job. If you come here as a single man, there are some areas you cannot go because they are reserved for family. So my husband will have more privilege working with me because he's a family man. And so because you do not have your Western white people in these low positions, you see, a publication that was being done by some other people from outside that does have those nuanced conversations about how life is in Qatar, so that you can compare to what I have said here. But then again, even if you ask, why would a Kenyan guy come to drive a taxi here to earn 1,500 riyals per month? He'll tell you, what was I doing in Kenya? And that is the conversation we also need to have. Workers coming from Kenya, so your people in the building, your security guards, your cleaning ladies, because those are the people who are at the mercy of being exploited. So although the country is also doing something to change that, yeah, so we have systems like, oh, people are not being paid their salaries. The central bank has said all, because they have numbers of everyone who comes here. They know if I go out of this country and come back, I will still get my current ID number, because it's based on your country, it's based on your age, the year you were born. So I'll get the same number. They have our fingerprints and our iris scans. They have all this data about us. So they have these numbers and they know. So they're saying, if you've come here because you are sponsored by an employer, that employer is responsible for your stay here. So like, even they... I think you asked me this question and I didn't answer. The process of emigrating is very different. Like if you got a green card, you're going to the US, you must have this amount of money in your account to go and start life. If you're coming to Qatar, your employer is responsible for everything. They are the ones who are going to do the paperwork. So you will provide them with your certificates. They will go to the authorities to get a visa for you. When you come here, they have these people called PROs in the companies, public relations officers, who are liaisons between organizations and the immigration department, who go now to do the process for you. You will undergo a medical test. You move here, you also get that government healthcare system. Everybody has a card to the, it's called Hamad Corporation. Everyone has. So you have your big hospitals and then you have your primary healthcare centers. You are assigned based on where you live. Your employer provides you with accommodation. So like if you're a family person, you get an apartment or a villa in a compound, depending also on the level of your position, which level. If you are low, shared accommodation. So you don't have to worry about those things. You come, start working, everything is provided for. If you do not have correct documentation, which there are people who do not have, because you come as a maid or somebody, and then you run away from your employer, then you will struggle. But they really follow, and they do know these numbers of people who are all over. It's not as difficult. You just come. So a lot of organizations, the HR departments have people who deal with facilities. Some lease a lot of compounds, apartment blocks to keep their people. They even have their own apartment complex. And then you have people who receive people from the airport, who make sure that you have a starter kit in the house. So you will have like milk, they will put some things that you can eat in 2 days or 1 week for you in the house. You don't come starting from scratch. Then also the low level employees, they're taken, they're put up in the accommodation, some are shared, they're saying things are improving. Initially when we came here, we had something. So for my husband, he kept his passport. To leave the country, your employer had to allow you to leave the country. So they have to give you that letter. It's called no objection letter. Mm-hmm. You either have to have that to change employers, but now they've removed it because I think they figured they're losing a lot of people because the law was if you are fired or if you quit, you cannot get another job here for another 2 years. You have to go out and then come back. But that's loss because mm-hmm. you have the Gulf mm-hmm. experience that they want you to have. Things have progressed. For the 10, 11 years I've been here, things have progressed. I think it is this year that they have removed that NOC. So if you got another job, you just told your employer, I've got another job, I'm changing jobs. But the leaving is still there. For me, as a trailing spouse or as a spouse, if I leave the country, my husband is notified, me and the children. The moment the passport is stamped, he gets a message, your sponsors are leaving the country. It's like that. That's how the system is.
How does Kenya look like from that distance?
So it is called, you have to be proactively searching for these news and the nuance in news. That's why you will see me, I'll send you a picture and say, what is happening? Because when I came here, I didn't care. And I think this is something that is some sort of growth for me because I was running from Kenya. I was not interested. I was like, but then you grow. You live this reality of knowing, okay, so you're not going to be a naturalized Qatari. So what next? And then your interests back home. And then you have family. And home is home. For my children, maybe it's going to be different. But for me, I was formed by Kenya. And then you see things and you start wondering, why can't we have this? So then you start becoming, like I started becoming proactively interested and engaged with Kenyans, with Kenya. You start with the areas of interest. For me, politics is an area of interest. So like when I went to Facebook, I was searching for those people. And then you start being more nuanced in, okay, so what do you want to know? Do you want the normal noise or do you want education? And in the noise, you start identifying people. Okay, so I'm seeing this guy. Okay, follow this guy. This is how I followed you. It's friend requested. You say, okay, he's saying some things that I sort of agree with because I see them working here. We can maybe work on this. So you become more, you know, critical in who you follow, who you allow to follow you. And so it's based off my interest. Like I would go to, I love music, I love food, I love to dance. So I even follow dancers. Like I go to Instagram, I follow Art in Motion. That is how I know so-and-so has released a song. Oh, go, okay, go check them out. So that's how I expand my horizons. If I stayed in politics only, that is one area of my interest and it won't give me a bigger picture. But when you go and you're following dancers and musicians, you see a different story. It gives you a well-rounded picture of Kenya. Okay, so I'm interested, I'm in higher education, try and connect with people in higher education. What are they saying? Oh, there's a new curriculum being brought up. I knew about the curriculum better than people who are in Kenya because I followed people that I had interest in. So my interests are the ones that are giving me this big picture. Okay, now I'm following these people. Now we have to, Ombachi is he called Ombachi? The one who hits chickens? Yeah, but I like him. So I follow. Then he says something, and then somebody might say something under his post that I identify with, that I like, and I follow. And then I start growing my network. So now I'm not only on Kenya Twitter, I'm also on Nigeria Twitter. I want to see these Pan-African movements, how are we going to build them? So that's how I expand. My interests are the ones that I've given. I'm sure other people's interests also expand that way. If you keep it one way, you won't get the bigger picture. And then I've also learned to stop being afraid to connect with people. Initially, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my first book. It has to be clean. I have to keep to these people. So sometimes I engage with people, my gosh, they say things, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to go under the table. But that's another perspective. Listen to it. See, even if you don't agree with it, this is the conversation that is taking place in Kenya. Like, one of the things that I think, even on Twitter, you can see, it's not politics. It's this boy, child, girl, child conversation. It really irritates me because I have a boy child and girl child. I would do anything for my children. I do not want to belittle my son. I don't want to belittle my daughter. I want everyone to have the same opportunities. So I'm like, okay, for me, it's at the human level. I don't want to pedestalize the girl child, but I also do not want to refute the problems that girl children have compared to their male counterparts in some areas of Kenya, where a girl will be told, go fetch water, son, sit and study. It is the truth of the matter. But we shouldn't fight. We shouldn't fight about it. So the interests that I have actually allow me to see a bigger picture.
How do you keep abreast of news at home?
So interests, I think, are very important. When you start identifying what are the things that make you happy, in essence, you start finding that those interests add a pixel to the picture. So you have this picture of politics, then you have this picture of culture, you have this picture of food, dance, you know, then you start, you expand. You have people talking about books, people publish. So all those things help me add to the picture. And then obviously family reinforces the picture or says, no, that's not how it is. Visits home. And when you come home, it's not just superficial. I do the superficial stuff of, missed Nyama Choma, go eat it. And post it on Facebook, I've eaten Nyama Choma, I'm so happy. But then again, you talk to people, you go home, and like I go to Taita and I immerse myself in the discussions there. I go to Kericho and hide there and see how people relate to other people. So I'm not just Nairobi, because I think we also forget that we are more than Nairobi sometimes in the discussion. Yeah.
This week, I'm not sure you interacted with the news where they said basically they want to start documenting Kenyans who are abroad, especially because they send home almost 7 billion a week. They want to know where you are, but of course, it's coming from the regulatory authority. Of course, they want to know where you are so they can do it for tax purposes. But beyond the tax conversation, there's the support for families back at home. Some of those who understand the fact that, you know, maybe you might not be there forever. You might move to Canada, but you might also come back to Kenya. And what is the perception of that? Because people sometimes call it black tax, which is...
I think in terms of, like I said, we have different types of immigrants. So I would tell you, the Kenyans who are in the places where they can naturalize, maybe view it as black tax. I assure you, none of us who are in Qatar think of it as black tax. Okay, so there is the aspect of, I'm trying to level my living standard, upgrade my level of living standard, which in fairness, I have managed, and I'm fortunate. Not all of us manage. We get subsidies from our organization. That is one of the reasons, the ways they can pull people here. Having said that, all of us, whether you are on what level of privilege or what, however low that privilege is, we all know it is like, even when we came here, the things that we were discussing is open an account in Kenya, send money there, because you don't even know how to handle your money. So it's a whole lot of conversation. There's laws that sometimes we are lazy to find out, like, if I lost my spouse here, how will it be, you know? And these are things I've not engaged with, in all honesty. But you have to know, are you recorded in the organization as the next of kin? Will you get the end of service benefits? Because when we work here, we do not get retirement. You know, like the way you pay into retirement benefit schemes, we don't get that. What we get is they calculate a certain end of service, which is for every year you've worked, a certain percentage of your salaries. So the more you work, the longer you work, the more the amount of the salary as per the labor law. So if you work less than 5 years, it's 3 weeks of your month's salary for the number of years you work. Above, it's 1 month. Above 10 years is one month, 1 week salary for all the number of years you worked. You're given your kibunda at the end of the day, you go with it. So for us, we have to think. So I don't have the retirement benefit plan. It does not mean that I will not retire at some point. What am I doing at home? So when we talk as people and as the groups that we come together, just like any other diaspora, is how do I invest in Kenya, investing in land? People are buying insurance schemes, education insurance, because, like, for example, for me, I don't have to worry about school kids for my kids, but I have to worry about college. What happens next? So those are the things that we are planning. It is not a black tag. I have to have a home. So depending on the level of your privilege and the ability for you to save, you have to invest back home. They're calling it their retirement or their safety net, because the rug can be pulled from under your feet anytime. People try to build, people try to buy houses, people join SACCOs. Like, I think here there's welfare for some Kenyans to help with repatriation of the dead if you die, to help you if you lose your parents and what have you. So those are the things that people think. Everybody knows we are going to go back home. So either you invest outward or you invest back at home. It is very difficult. It is convenient to do a bank transfer. As a Kenyan who came to Qatar, I'll tell you, if I go to the ATM, I can go to any ATM, be it for my bank or not. As long as I have a Visa card or MasterCard with that chip, I withdraw money. I am not charged a cent. I am not charged a cent to withdraw my money. So it is a shock when I come to Kenya and I go to ATMs and then I see the charges. However, they get us. They get us in the exchange rates. Number one, I know if I send money from here, a bank transfer to Europe, I can foot the entire bill. I say, I want in that account in Italy, 100 euro to enter the account. I will pay everything. It is allowed. It used to be, we used to be able to do that, but now it has changed. So if you're sending money Kenya, you split fee to receive that money. So they do get us in the exchange rates and they get us in the excise duty. They charge something and then the bank charges us a certain percentage of the charge. We have also Uredu money. Uredu is like the Safaricom, yeah? It's the largest mobile network. And I think they did indeed poach quite a number of Kenyans to come work for these telecoms here because of mobile money. It is big money for the companies here. Their exchange rate is better than the bank's exchange rate. But obviously, you are limited at how much you send. I can be able to send money from my Uredu to a Safaricom number at a better rate, but you have a limitation. Yes, we do send back money back home for back tax for our future and what have you. But then also the living expenses here are very high. Of late, now we have a cheaper, more affordable public transit system because they've started the metro. So it's flying Doha. It's new. It just started because of 2022 World Cup. But it has come in handy because the buses were not enough. And the terrain itself is not very friendly. Like in summer, you can't walk to the stage. It is so hot. So people are using Ubers and taxis. And so the public transit system is really helping people. And what they have done with the metro is that from different neighborhoods, they have buses that ply those neighborhoods to take people freely to the metro stations, which is a good thing. But the living costs here, the rent, even when you'd come and live in a block of flats, two-bedroom, you're paying 7,500 Qatarians. So the rent is very high. The food costs are very high, especially during the blockade. The food cost went high. But fuel, gas for cooking. I pay 15 rial for a 13-kilogram gas tank. 13 rial times 30 is what? So gas is cheap. Fuel is cheap. I pay, I think, about 1 rial per liter. So all those things you people put into consideration, the cost of living is just too high. It's exorbitant, even compared to, like, if you compare rent here and some cities in Europe, it's too expensive. Okay, so I must also point out, I mean, the figures have increased in what people are repatriating, and I might be able to corroborate that. During COVID, my close relatives, some of them lost jobs, some of them got sick, and so there was more giving. And that more giving took away from, let's say, savings, or took away from something that I would have done here. So there was that sacrificial giving. But then I also want to, sometime before, there's that flight of Kenyans who did lose jobs. In Qatar, it was because one of the largest employers in Qatar is, I mean, the airline industry is the one that really was affected. And those people have not been employed. But Kenyans made quite a large number of people employed. And so there were those as well. So even going forward, I don't know, maybe those numbers were the people who were given their end of service benefits, they brought those numbers back. But what happens in the next 2 years? Are those finances going to be there? Are these people landing in their feet? When you come back to an economy that is battered, are you able to even invest and reap benefits from all your hard work beforehand? So I'd say let's wait and see, because I want to maybe bet or suggest that next year we'll see maybe reduced numbers, because these numbers from last year or maybe the people coming back with these amounts. Thinking, it's not only me, there are some brilliant Kenyans working here, by the way. It's not, we are, you know, in the range, it's a spectrum from the people who are coming here, and people who are qualified and because they don't have those resources are accepting low positions, to people who are very brilliant, who are earning good money. Like, but then again, for me, I realized, and that is my driving force. I came saying, I don't care. But I sat here and I realized, you know, even these countries, you're saying, like Qatar, you can even, I think there are maps online, you can go and Google and you can see their progress in the 70s, even Lebanon, the 70s. I came here in 2009. There was one major road, it's called Searing Road. So they have these ring roads. There's B Ring Road, Searing Road, D Ring Road. Searing Road was the major road at that point. It was the widest with no roundabouts. Now it's the most congested road because the rest of the roads have been expanded. You have your four-lane highways, underpasses, overpasses, metros that have been dug underground. So I ask myself, because we have this conversation about freedom to participate in politics. And some people have brought up the issue of a benevolent dictator, which I think is an oxymoron. But if you have somebody who really actually cares for people, because I would wager, if you told a Qatari today, go be an American or go be a Kenyan, they'll tell you no thank you. A lot of their laws are passed by the Emiri decree. Although they do have a parliament that suggests to the Emira, they have elections for these law positions. Qataris have it so nice, I think. I have not explored with them this politics because it's also a difficult conversation to have with them because of them. Because ideally, I want the freedom to speak, but I also want people to have responsibility in what their utterances are.
How best do you think diaspora community are able to basically engage, and not just at a national level in terms of politics, of course, coming up, but also in terms of helping people understand what is available out there, conversations about this sacrificial giving that is not about to end in a week or two?
To build our systems, our institutions, to improve the lot of ourselves, and I don't know how to do that. I think the 2010 Constitution has given us a beautiful blueprint that we should not change. We should try to enact at least 50% of it. For example, I'll give you a very simple example because I'm in the field, libraries. Libraries have been taken to the county level. Let us build libraries. Let us equip libraries so that we can bridge these gaps. Libraries are not about books only. They're about the resources they offer, the subscriptions, the access to the internet, the space for kids to learn. In Mwatate, when I was growing up, there was no light. If you did not study before the sunset, it's a problem. You cannot be in the kitchen and for you to study. But if we had these community centers that people can actually go and learn, you know what? These will be centers where we can even bring people and we say, oh, the county wants to pass this law. So let's discuss it. there is people participation. But how do we build these systems? Because I did some sort of research, and yes, people want these spaces, but it seems as though that library is not as important as health, as food, agriculture, as water, like in Mwatate, as water. Water is big. So maybe if we had these libraries and people learned things, we can learn to know how to change our health outcomes. But when you present the idea of a library vis-a-vis health, people will tell you, hospital. So really, I'm struggling. Do I come and build a library on my own? Do I find people with money? But I also don't think that's a solution, because I'll be leaving a lot of stakeholders. You want communities to come together. I believe in, okay, let's agree, let's pay 10 shillings every month as residents of Taita Taveta, and that 10 shillings goes to building, equipping, paying for libraries, because they're institutions or they're resources that require to be paid for. But somebody will tell you, no, I don't want to pay that. Leave alone, I don't want. The county government of Taita Taveta cannot even collect enough levy from the traders and what have you to run the county. So I have this solution. I feel that it's a solution that will contribute to us making those decisions that will make us choose different leadership. But in the grand scheme of things, when people say, let us rank these things, my idea is a lost one. How do I create, you know, a critical mass of people that think this is a brilliant idea? There are people who've started libraries, but still, it's a personal thing. It's a personal thing. It's not a community-built thing. I have tried to have these conversations about libraries, like even with politicians. And then every time I bring it up, they're like, who do you know out there who can give us money? And I don't think we can develop when we look outward. I have seen, like even in the development of Qatar, like I've told you, I've seen things go. They might bring expertise from outside, but it's the idea ownership is theirs. Nobody is prescribing, this is what we'll do. Okay, this is how a road is built. This is the science to building a road. But the idea of, we want a road that accommodates this, and this is why we want it, because we are proud to be Qatari, we want safe roads for our people, is inherently theirs. So we have to also own these ideas of how to take things forward. We should also not forget, honestly, even when we talk about nationhood and from where this idea of nationhood came, we did have our own ethnic nation. But this idea of statehood and nationhood, like even in those countries, the forming of nationhood was very violent in those days. Like you have countries like France, where you hear that there's some even languages that were lost because the country had to come together and be one thing. So we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We can leapfrog, but we must accept to leapfrog. We say, I don't know how we are going to coexist as ethnic nations. I really don't know. Even those countries struggle. Like I know Belgium, I think there was an election that they stayed for so long without a government because the ethno states were not physically warring, but they were warring. They were not in agreement with each other. So I don't know how we can cobble up 42 ethnic states, some of which are divided half into different countries. Your Tanzanian uncle, Maasai uncle, is not an uncle, is not a Kenyan. Or your Pokot, or your Luo cousin in Uganda is not Kenyan. How do you make a kinship with people you're not in agreement with? I don't know.
We'll get it. I mean, it's hits and misses. We, you know, we get this right. We tweak as we go. It's
yeah, we tweak as we go.
But much appreciated.
Let's see how it progresses, and then we do our part. Because I think individually we have to do our part. Actually, I remember the question that you asked. I chose my children, and dust up that passport, and if you can go somewhere else, go.
Yeah.
And I know you will go. You will succeed anywhere in the world. You will succeed because you're brilliant. When you have that brilliance, there will be a curve to the immigration process, but you will succeed. You're smart, you're educated, you have that. Anywhere will be lucky to have you. But then at some point, because you have those roots and you're still tied to Kenya, something will be calling to you. Like even for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, can we hurry up with the college? Because if I dump these kids in college and I can pay for their college, maybe I can go back and roll my sleeves and do something. That's my thinking. But at the moment, I cannot think about myself and the country only, because I have a responsibility to the kids.